When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Legends Lounge. I'm True with us, and with me in the lounge today, we have former Thornwood High Thunderbird. He was a first-round pick of the Chicago Bulls and an NBA champion with the Miami Heat. We got Eddie Curry in the house. Eddie, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I see that Thornwood Thunderbirds in the back, man. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Had to. Thank you for joining us. How you keeping busy during this, I was going to say summer, it's really going into fall now.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a father of six, so, I mean, that alone is like
say no more.
You know, a year round, and we got, you know, four dogs, so it's like, but I mean, other than that, man, I do a lot of work with the PA, man, just going, talking to guys about financial literacy and just the importance of it, man, talking mm-hmm. to the rookies and just, you know, really just trying to be that beacon, man, so the guys could you know, understand that they're in an incredible position, incredibly lucky. The hard work has paid off, and you're in an incredible place right now to be able to play in the NBA. But, you know, to think about life after the NBA and, you know, just to really start taking your finances serious because it goes really fast. Your NBA career goes really, really fast.
Is that something you knew you wanted to get into? Like, even while you were playing, you knew you wanted to, you know, talk to the younger guys? Or is that something, I guess, how did that come about?
Not really, honestly. It came from personal experiences. It came from hitting my head a bunch of times and then realizing that, you know, a lot of guys are doing the same things and headed toward the same way, the same type of pitfalls that I kind of encounter. So once I realized that, man, I just, you know, I reached out to the PA, man, and they do a really good job, them and the NBA, at giving us the opportunity, us guys who have seen it all and done it all to really come back and speak on our life and on our journey and things we did well and things we didn't do so well at all.
What were some of those pitfalls for you, like some of the things you try to convey to the younger guys?
I mean, simple things, just like the importance of a prenuptial agreement. I mean, you'd be surprised. And I hate to, you know, it's hard, you know, I know what it's like to be young and in love and to feel like that this thing that you have is gonna last forever. But just the fact is, it sometimes doesn't. And, you know, I just try to get guys to understand that we got to look at ourselves like companies, you know, and any businessman, anybody that spent their life really just going after it and accumulating a lot of wealth. I mean, they do an equal job at protecting that wealth. So a part of doing that is a prenuptial agreement. A part of doing that is, you know, really vetting out who you have around you and just I don't know, man, just looking at yourself in a different perspective, something different than just, you know, what you've become accustomed to looking at yourself as, you know, up to that point.
That's real. Have guys been like, are they receptive to it? Because I feel like as a young guy, you probably hear that and it's like, okay, yeah, it'll never be me. Yeah. No matter how many times you hear it, but have the guys been receptive to it?
Yeah, sure. And of course you got, you know, it's, but it's a lot, man. It's not just that. It's trying to find the right accountant, trying to, how do you say no to your family? How do you say no to your friends? You know, how do you properly give money to your friends and help? Because you want to help your friends and family out. I mean, they were all along this journey with you.
Right. But was that a tough one for you?
It's just trying to find the right way to do it.
Was that a tough one for you?
Like telling me family, personally, friends? Yeah, of course, man. Like, you know, being from Chicago, man, and seeing what I felt like was just kind of the worst growing up, you know? So I felt like immediately I was always that kind of person, like wherever I went, I wanted my family, I wanted my friends to see and experience that. So, I mean, that kind of just really, it just carried on. When I got to the NBA, I wanted them to feel and experience the same, you know, things that I was experiencing and feeling. So, I mean, that gets expensive though, when you bring a lot of people on the line you know, you want to retire your parents, you want to, you know, make life easy for them, you want to get them a house and things like that. And you don't realize just how, you know,
it
how,
adds up.
Yeah, it's a lot. It adds up really fast. And then you got this short window that you can actually, you know, play basketball. It's funny. Like I talked to I'm really friendly with some doctors, man. And the one doctor was like, man, you know, we did the same things that you did. We messed up some money early on, but the difference between you and me is like, I got a whole career. My career will last me 40, 30, 40, 50 years. You
right.
know
I can work into my 40s, 50s, 60s,
5, 10 years. You know what I'm saying? So when you got that kind of earning potential over that amount of time, man, I mean, it's easier to kind of get yourself back on track. It's easier to bump your head and recover from that. But, you know, when the way it is for most of us, man, this is our one shot. Not only just our one shot at the league and at, you know, trying to be an MVP, trying to win a championship, trying to, you know, accumulate all the accolades that we want to accumulate, but also just to make that kind of money. So, I mean, that's just something that I try to express to the guys, man, get them to kind of get them a preview of what the other side looks like, you know, and it could be a really beautiful thing. It could be a time mm-hmm. to kick your feet up and enjoy just the fruits of your labors. But I mean, it could be hell too, man, if you don't pay attention.
Mm. And like you said, you're really trying to fit it all in. I was going to say within 10 years, but we know if you get 10 years in the NBA, that's a blessing. Everybody don't get 10. Everybody don't get 5 even.
No, for sure. Yeah. And guys don't understand that. You know, when you look in and you sit and talking to the rookie class, everybody thinks that they're going to be the exception to the rule. They're going to be the one that makes it, you know what I mean, until year 17, year 18, 19, 20, 21, like LeBron, you know. So it's like, it's tough, man. You know, it's tough, man. There's definitely more people from my class. I mean, you see it. As the years go on, less and less people in your class are still in the NBA. I mean, it's only a handful of jobs available. Only 5,000 people have ever played in the NBA. So when you start crunching numbers and looking at it's about 1,400 retired players living on this earth. You know, it's a handful of people that made it from the NBA to the league, including myself. So, I mean, it's a really, really small numbers, man. Really, really small numbers. And it's just really trying to get guys to understand just how quick this thing goes, because it goes really fast. Mm.
At the time, does it feel like it's going quick? I like to walk back through some guys' careers, but at the time, like, is it going warp speed, or did you feel like it's going slow? I feel like I've heard it both.
It felt like it was going slow, honestly, just because it's almost like Groundhog's Day, you know?
Right.
Like your whole life is like a whole schedule. Most of your year is consumed with your 82-game season and playoffs if you're on a good team. So, I mean, just the off days are far in between, and then you got practices, and then you got your naps, and then you got, I mean, it's nonstop. Honestly, it's like a hamster wheel. It's the time of your life, man. The camaraderie, the friendships, the brotherhood that you experience and that you develop. I mean, that's a lifelong thing, and that's a beautiful thing. But like, yeah, man, you look up and you like, damn, it's been 10, 12, 14 years.
Right.
You know, like, even since it's been, you know, 20 something years since I got drafted. And I mean, it seems like just yesterday. So yeah, while you in it, man, it definitely seems like it's going slow and that you got all the time in the world. And that's the trick, man, because you look up and it's like, I actually been in the league for 10 years. Like when I looked up, I'm like, damn, I've been in the league for a decade. Like,
right.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's something I've heard you mention before, that you never really wanted to play basketball.
No, so, I mean, at first I wanted to be a gymnast. You know, I'm in Chicago. We had the Jesse White tumblers, man. So I always wanted to be, like, to me, the highlight of everything would have been like me performing at the Bud Billiken Parade, doing like tumbling routines, or going to the Bulls game and performing at halftime, doing tumbling routines at the half. Like that to me, that was like the highlight of everything. Like growing up, you know, in Cal City, man, like guys finding mattresses and flipping on mattresses and things like that. Like, I mean, that was it for me, you know. And then I was always taller, so the fact that I could do all of that stuff was really, like, it got me a lot of attention. So yeah, playing basketball, that was like, I had no idea I would play basketball.
So when did you stop flipping?
When I got to the NBA and they were like, man,
really
doing that. Pretty much, yeah.
I thought you were gonna say like 12 or 13. Like once you started getting taller, you were still seven feet tall flipping on
mattresses. Even now, man, you know, we'll go, maybe a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago, we went to one of those trampoline spots and I had to show the kids I still had it. You know,
that you still had the fastball?
Yeah, you know, it's honestly, man, it's like riding a bike, man. It just hurts a little more. Like now I can hop on a bike and I could, and it feels the same. But when you go out there and you try to do a round off to a backflip, and it's like, ooh, that gravity is a little different
right. now. You know? It ain't used to hit like that.
It ain't used to hit like that. The gravity hit different now at 41, 42, baby. Shoot.
So the Bulls were really, they were take like, hey, you can't be flipping.
Like, yeah, they're like, nah, you need to cut that out. Because at first it was funny. It's funny though, because like, before I got drafted, that was almost one of my things that I would do. Like my guy who was kind of holding my hand throughout the whole process. When we would get to these teams, he's like, man, show him the backflip, because they were looking at it like, oh man, look at this big man that's so athletic. He's so big, but he's so nimble on his feet. So I mean, they kind of looked at it like that. But yeah, once I got to Chicago, it was like, all right, enough of that, you know, enough of that.
Okay, so when did you realize that? Like basketball is like, okay, one, I'm good at this. Two, I think I can be professional at this. When did you start thinking that?
Man, I would say around like my junior year, maybe sophomore year, maybe in high school.
What happened then?
That's when I kind of started realizing that I was better than like everybody in my area. And then, you know, it just became one of those things, you know, when you were a kid growing up hooping, man, it was like, I wanted to be better than everybody in Calumet City, everybody
around me,
yeah. Dalton, everybody in that area, you know. And then, you know, as I got better than everybody in downtown Chicago, not downtown Chicago, but all around the South Side, all around the West Side, I was the best basketball player in the state at one point. And then you start playing AAU and it's like, I want to be the best in the country. And it's like, okay, I actually am the best in the country. Or one of the best in the country. And at the time, you know, you were able to go to the league. So it's like, if I'm one of the best in the country, then obviously, you know what I'm saying? I could right. go to the league. So it's just one of those things. And it wasn't like I was a guard. I knew that a lot of what I did depended on my size and athleticism. And that's something that I could, you know, just have the foundation and kind of build on top of that as I went along. So, I mean, I kind of, once junior year, I was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to the league.
So when did you committed to DePaul, right?
Yeah, I
committed. When to was that, junior year? Or when was that senior
that
year?
That was, I want to say senior year, maybe.
Okay.
Might have been senior year.
But if you realize all that junior year, or in your head, you know you're not really going to DePaul, right?
Yeah, I know I'm not. Okay. I know it's a wrap. But you know, honestly, you know, I talked to Pat Kennedy, man, who he was coaching at the time. And that was really just an attempt to kind of get some attention on DePaul. You know, I felt like that was kind of an underlooked school in Chicago. Everything was kind of geared towards University of Illinois. When you think about right. Illinois basketball, you think about University of Illinois. But it's, you know, you got UIC there, you got DePaul there. So it was one of those things where it's like, you know, let me try to get some attention on this on this program over here.
Gotcha.
And yeah, man, try to get some of the talent that's in Chicago would think that it was cool to want to go there. And I was, you know, really good friends with Quinn Richardson. So, mm-hmm. you know, I've always kind of had ties to DePaul. You know, I always was cool with a lot of the guys that were there. So, I mean, to me, it was a natural thing to do.
So if you went to college, you probably would have went there. You just knew in your mind, college yeah. is probably not going to be an option.
Yeah, it's not. It's not happening. It's right. not happening.
What do you think your path looks like now? Because right now, yeah, guys can't come out of high school anymore. You could, you know, do 1 year at DePaul. You could do as many years as you like. You could overseas or G League Ignite. What do you think that path would look like for you now?
Man, you know, college. I think I would go to college for sure, especially knowing what I know now. I would absolutely go to college. NIL money, like all of that. Like, I would go to college for sure. Like, they would have to kick me out of college. Like, I
like you staying year after year.
Because, I mean, once you feel pretty, you know, comfortable with, you know, your finances and things like that, man. And, you know, your parents aren't struggling like they were. I mean, we were used to having nothing or very little, you know. Right. So, I mean, just a nice little NIL deal would have went a long way. And it also would have given me time to mature mentally and just, you know, as a man, you know, become a young man in college and, you know, get some tools I could really take into the NBA.
I feel like you probably didn't get that benefit of the doubt just because you looked physically developed. at 17, 18. So it wasn't like, no, that's a 17 or 18 year old kid. They're thinking that's a 7 foot, you know, 300 pound man, we're dealing with.
It's crazy you say that. It's been like that since, you know, maybe seventh grade.
Yeah, when did you start growing?
Yeah, in seventh grade, I probably was 6'7", 6'8". So it was times where the teachers would, you know, my mom and would have to come to the school and talk to the teachers and say the same exact thing that you're saying. Like, man, I understand that he's bigger than normal, but he is a kid. Like,
still 12, 13, right.
Being a class clown, it looks different when you know what I'm saying, 6'8", you're bigger than the teacher and they're intimidated by you, you know what I mean? But I'm a class clown, I'm disruptive. I probably had a touch of ADHD or something like that, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, but, you know, sitting still for 6-7 hours a day, man, that was tough for me. You know, especially in classes that I didn't feel like were speaking to me and things that I wanted to try and do in life. So, I mean, it was tough. But yeah, it was definitely times my parents had to come and talk to teachers. Like, man, I understand. You know, you might feel like he's an adult or whatever, but no, this is a kid. This is he's a sixth grader. He's a seventh grader. He's, you know, he's 11, 12, 13 years old. So, you know, give him some grace. You know,
right. And I feel like that would probably factor into you wanting to be like, maybe I don't want to go to college right now. I'm kind of done with the school aspect. I'm ready to get to the pro side.
Yeah, I mean, my senior year was crazy. I had like a TV show. It was over with. You know what I mean? Like, you're at your games and the games are bigger than any game I had ever been to. They bringing in extra seats. The games are sold out. You know what I'm saying? TV cameras, you look up and it's all type of NBA officials, NBA like brass in the games, Jerry Krause and BJ Armstrong and you name it, they were at the game. So, I mean, it's like, I wanted to see what was next. And the next thing was the NBA.
Mm. What do you remember about that draft process? It's like you finish your year. I imagine you had like you played in the McDonald's All-American game.
MVP.
What do you remember about that?
I remember it being a crazy experience, like, because it almost felt like, I don't know, man, being around so many talented people, and we had DeJuan Wagner in our
class. Yeah, who else? Who was on those teams with you?
Man, we had D-Wags, we had David Lee, we had my boy TJ Ford, we had
I guess Kwame Tyson was probably in there. Tyson Chandler,
Kwame Brown was there.
White, was he there? If David Lee was there, wasn't James Flight
David
White?
Lee, David Lee was my roommate. David Lee was my roommate in the McDonald's game. So that was crazy. Like that was to me, like D Lee, people don't even understand this. D Lee has always been that, like, I don't know if God put him there or what. I don't know how, but like I never knew D Lee, right? The first time I met D Lee, it was my junior year in high school, and we were playing in a KMOX shootout in like Missouri or something like that.
Okay.
And I was about to play Tyson. This was the first time me and him was gonna match up against each other, and the whole world was waiting to see how this was gonna turn out.
Are y'all 1 and 2, like ranked prospect?
Yeah, right. 1 and 2. Our schools are like 1 and 2 in the country. Like, it's the biggest game ever, right? So I'm sitting in the crowd waiting on my game. I'm watching Kwame or somebody else play. It's another game going on at the time. And D Lee just comes and sits right next to me. I never met D Lee before. He just sits next to me. And he's like, man, just acting like we've been cool our whole life. Yeah, what's up, man? I'm David. You know, blah, blah, blah. He's giving me scouting reports on everybody. Like, I've been keeping tabs on all you guys. He's like, yeah, I'm ranked like number 40 in the nation. But, you know, I seen all the top whatever, blah, blah, blah. I seen all you guys play. You're the best one by far. You're this and that. He's like, Tyson could just do this. Like, he gave me a whole scouting report.
Like, full breakdown.
Bro, it was the craziest thing ever. It's the first time I ever seen David Lee, bro. Didn't even know who he was, bro. And I was like, okay, cool. So then, you know, fast forward, when I meet him at, when we at McDonald's, it's like, oh, that's my roommate. Like, what's up, D? Like,
right, I know him now.
So we was kicking it the whole time, bro, just having fun and stuff. Like, it's funny, I actually tricked D Lee into getting into the dunk contest, and then he won the dunk contest.
How'd that happen?
Everybody just knew it was a lock that Flight was gonna win. James White, like, he was like the coldest dunker high school, probably still is. I ain't gonna lie, he probably
maybe ever, man, yeah.
ever. But if y'all look back, bro, D Lee won the dunk contest, bro. And I'm the reason why. Like, everybody knew it was a lock. It was a lock. Like, D Lee, me and D Lee was like, and the McDonald's people were kind of like, they were kind of like begging us to join the dunk contest because nobody wanted to do it. So they like, man, we got to fill it out. You know, we don't even
got nobody enough. Wanted to go against James.
Yeah. So I'm like, I do it. So then D-Lee like, bro, if you do it, I do it. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll get in there. He's like, all you got to do. He's like, bro, just break the rim. If you break the rim, you're going to win. I'm like, all right, cool. So, but I knew, I was like, it's no way in hell I'm doing this dunk contest. So then right when it started, I pulled out. I was like, nah, I don't want to get hurt for tomorrow's game. Like D-Lee was like, no, man, no. So D-Lee ended up winning it though, man. We were tripping out. Like we couldn't believe it. It was like the craziest thing ever. D-Lee won a dunk contest, bro.
I remember watching that at the time thinking like, just looking at them both respectfully, you think yeah. James White's going to run away with this.
Absolutely.
And no, David Lee hung with him and won that.
D-Lee like, had the shoulder yeah. shit, though, man. Like, he took his jersey off and stuff. Like
he was ready.
He was ready. He knew, bro. But D-Lee was always, like, if you know D-Lee, dog, he's, like, a real hip dude, bro. Like, he's that cool dude, bro. Like, D-Lee's so cool, bro. He knew all the rap music. Any rap lyric, bro, like D-Lee's that he's that guy, bro. So that's what I'm saying. Like,
we gotta get D-Lee in the lounge, man. We gotta get him in here.
Gotta get him in here, bro. You will have no idea, bro. D-Lee the coolest dude I know, bro. He cool, bro.
Okay, so then you get to the game. That's before the game. You get to the game.
Yeah.
When do you know you like MVP is possible?
I still don't even know. I knew MVP was possible when I found out TJ was on my team, TJ Ford. TJ Ford.
The distributor. Man,
he just only want to pass the ball. And me and him was super tight from going to like NBA camp, from going to Nike camp. Like I've been seeing him on the circuit this whole time and we've been super, super cool. So when I found out I was on his team and he was like another guy like D-Lee, like giving me my props. Like, bro, you better than all of them. Like, yeah, what? Like Wags, he gonna put up 100, but like he ain't really played nobody. Like that was kind of the thing that he was like, you're like, man, D Wags and he like if you look at who he putting 100 up on, you know, I'm like, man, but it's still 100 though. You know what I'm
right.
saying?
Right, 100 is 100.
It's 100 is 100, bro. And I ain't taking nothing away from Wani because he's a GOAT to me. Like Wani is probably the GOAT high school player for real, in my opinion. Outside of like Benji or somebody like that. But like, nah, man, like I don't know, bro. Like, so when I saw that TJ was on my team, I knew I had a shot. I knew it was going to come down to who scored the most points. And then and then in the second half, he just kept feeding me and feeding me, literally just spoon fed me the game high. I think Wani got close because he started firing that thing. Boy, and he started making some shots. I think he ended up with 28. I think I had like 31. And then we won the game. So I got MVP.
So after that, you pretty much know you're going into the draft. What's the draft?
Yeah. After that, it's like
it's
like the movie. It's like a real movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like that. Yeah.
So what do you remember about the draft process? Like workouts or
I remember I only worked out for a couple teams. I think the first team I worked out for was the Hawks. I think the Hawks had it was like a insurance policy. Like, all right, go work out for the Hawks because they got like the lowest you're gonna go is like 11 or 12 or something like that. So go work out for them just in case you gotta go there type. And I remember going there and Shane Battier was in my workout. It was me, Shane Battier, it was Lauren Woods, and it was I forget the other people that were there. But I remember we had to do this classroom part where they had us taking like a math test or something like that. So we in this literally in this little classroom sitting in these little desks, right? This is for an NBA workout, bro. This is an NBA workout, taking a real math test. So like, man, I don't know nothing.
I thought I left this in high school.
Shane coming in from Duke, graduate, brainiac, you know what I'm saying?
They're ready to go.
And they sit me right next to him. So quite naturally, I hit him with the wondering eyes, like, okay. And man, he just as loud as he can, bro. It's so quiet in the room, bro. It's only like five or six of us in there. He says, "Jesus Christ, Eddie, this is basic math." Like I was like, "Whoa!"
Like put you on blast.
Whoa, like bro. So I always hated Shane. I always after that I was like,
to this day, do you still hold the grudge?
No, only because when I went to Miami, Shane Battier came to Miami. Mm. Me and Shane was in Miami, so I got really, really cool with Shane then. Like, I forgave him. And I think I told him about that too. But like for a long time, bro, I always hated Shane Ray. Like, oh, I hate this dude. Like, if you could put a hit out on somebody, like, hey, I'm putting a hit out amongst all my centers. Take him out every
31.
Time.
I need him
take
out.
Him out. Like, cause I was so embarrassed, bro. I was so embarrassed. I'm like, come on, Shane.
What happened
Shane
in the test?
Was one of them guys, bro. Like, he was one of those college players. Like, and I would probably feel the same way, honestly, looking back on it. But these guys put that work in college.
Right.
And
4 years, like, yeah.
We don't got a shot to be one of the top picks because we got these high school kids who don't know nothing about nothing. They coming in and now they gonna be the top picks. So I get it now. But then I'm just
back
like,
then,
oh,
right?
Are you big hater? Huh? Okay, Shane, I got you.
Wait, so did you get in trouble? Did they do anything in the test? Like, what happened?
I don't think I got in trouble, but I definitely didn't finish the test because at that point, I'm like, they know I don't know this. No way. I just didn't even finish it. And I think I told my agent, like, I did good on the basketball part, but on the classroom
the SAT part not so much.
Yeah, not so much. Not so much. But my homie told me, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So I don't know.
You were just looking around the room, seeing if Shane understood the
directions. I was stretching, bro.
Stretching your neck, stretching your eyes. Yeah.
That's all it was, man.
So after that, you know you're not falling too far in the draft. Where do you think you're, like, going? Where do you think your range
is? I'm trying to go to Washington. I want to be the number one pick. I'm like, you know, this to me, whoever is the number one pick, in my little world of high school basketball phenom, like, I wanted to be the number one down guy, hands down, in our class. And to me, if I'm the number one pick, that instantly just, okay, I'm the number one guy to meet Tyson and Kwame. So yeah, to me, it was all about going there. And then if I couldn't go there just to be the number one pick, like, it was crazy because I already knew Jordan. I had a you know, a pretty good relationship with MJ anyway.
Just the Chicago thing.
Yeah, Chicago thing. I worked out with Tim Grover ever since I was, like, I don't know, a sophomore, junior in high school. Tim has always been my trainer. So I don't know. I just, the whole, like, oh my God, I want to play for MJ thing, it was really just because I wanted to be the number one pick. But my heart, I wanted to go to the Clippers though, because
really
Miles was super cool.
Oh, yeah.
Man, me and Q Rich, that was always like a big brother, somebody I always looked at as like, man, he's doing it right. I want to do it like Q did it, you know, in the city. When he was going to DePaul, man, we played on the same AAU team growing up. Like, you know, he always had the cool, he was always the cool guy, had the waves, had the nice Tahoe at DePaul, you know what I'm saying? Like, when he went to the league, he was like hitting his head and all. Like, I was like, oh yeah, I want to go there. You know, even when I went to work out for them, like, they knew it was like, they knew, like,
they were both already there, right? They just got there.
Yeah, they were already there. They got there the year before. So
that would have been perfect.
I was like, I gotta go to the Clippers, man. Like, they only missing me. So, like, that's really all I was thinking about. But yeah, it didn't work out that way. I ended up, you know, the draft happened. We found out they're gonna take Kwame at number one. Number two was the Clippers. My agent's like, man, they're gonna take Tyson with the third pick. Like, I'm sitting at the table at the draft. He's like, man, they're gonna take Tyson with the second pick. And he's like, you know, if you wanna go, he was like, now the Grizzlies wanna take you with the third. He was like, but if you don't wanna go to the Grizzlies, then you can go to Chicago with the fourth. And I'm like, damn, I go to Chicago. Like, that's just how I was. That's exactly how it was, bro. Not
just because it was home.
Like, not even thinking about, like, man, I get to go home. Like that's really like how my agent got me to be happy about it. Cause it was literally like, I was disappointed. I wasn't the number one pick. I wasn't going to play with Q. Now I'm in LA, bro. I was disappointed. Like, to be honest with you, I'm like, Chicago. Like, really? Like, I could do that. You know what I'm saying? Because in my mind, I was already that guy anyway in Chicago. So I'm like, Chicago. Right. But, you know, like, once it really hit in and that you know, that was the hometown. And wait a minute, man, this is actually something really cool that you're going to be able to do. You know, it just took a little while. And then when I got to the back, I was mad because, like, damn, Tyson got to go. You know, Kwame went one. Tyson got to go to where I wanted to go. Now, you know, I'm in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But then it was like, My agent told me before they even announced it, he was like, man, they about to trade Tyson for Elton Brand. I was like, what?
Right. Yeah. When did you find out about
I found that out like before Tyson knew, because I remember going back there, taking my pictures and stuff, and calling, talking to Jerry Krause on the phone and stuff like that. And I remember watching Tyson with a LA hat on, and I seen somebody lean in and then hand him a Bulls hat. He had to take the LA hat off and put the Bulls hat on. I was like, dang. Then I walked up to him, we shook hands and stuff, and that was it, man. That was it. I was like, in my mind, I was like, hell yeah, you don't get to go either, boy. But then I was like,
right. We're was both like, gonna nah, be unhappy.
Man. You know what I'm saying? But then I was like, nah, man, that ain't cool, man. Like he had a chance to go play in front of his family just like I was about to do. So you know, I realized like, yeah, then really knowing him, getting to know him and stuff, and just seeing the adjustment that it took for him to come across country and play for the, you know, play for the Bulls, and just being a professional after being in high school, like, it's totally different. You can't even, it's so different. It's night and day.
Was it any kind of hesitation just in terms of you all's game style? Like, could we play together? It was a different NBA era. So
no, we always knew we could play together, because like, I didn't want to do nothing. I didn't want to do what he was great at. And he didn't really either want to do what I could do or didn't know how to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was a good low post scorer. I knew I had the big body. I had a soft touch around the rim. And I had a pretty quick, I can get up pretty quick off the ground so I could dunk it. You know, he was more of a pick and roll guy, you know, catching lobs. Just he didn't care. He had endless energy. Let me chase down rebounds.
Run the court, defense.
He did everything that I didn't want to do. So it was like, it was perfect. It was perfect. Like, to the point where, you know, we would know, we knew like, hey, when we play Shaq, bro, just body him up. I'm going to keep bodying him up. When he go into a shot, you just come across the top. So that's kind of how we would do. You know, we would play, really would play off each other. You know what I'm saying? We knew that individually, like, we lacked some things, but together, like, we kind of played off each other.
Was there any hesitation just going in Chicago after the Jordan years, or you're not even really thinking about that?
Not at all. You know, I told somebody that I was so young and dumb. It's like, what? We about to go there and go to the you know what I'm saying? Go to the playoffs and we're gonna win a ring in a couple.
We're gonna do what they did.
Like, man, you know, right? We didn't realize it wasn't like that. You know, you needed a good coach. You needed good vets, you needed good young dudes, you needed a little bit of luck, you needed to stay healthy. There's a lot of things that you needed to go right in order to put yourself in that type of situation.
So you get to the league, what would you say was your welcome to the NBA moment?
Welcome to the NBA moment, man. I had a lot of those. I ain't gonna even lie to you. I was having those for about 3 years, for real. Cause you gotta think, bro, when I got to the league, I think one time, like, I think my first year, bro, like, we played Shaq. This is 01 Shaq, bro. This is him, bro. Like
Lakers prime Shaq D.
Now, I didn't have any fear because I wasn't really scared of nobody. And also, like Shaq, when I first met Shaq, bro, when he came to United Center, I locked eyes with him when I was warming up, and he started walking towards me, and I'm just like, oh shit, like what is this?
Right, here we go.
So I'm walking towards him, and then he hugs me, and he say, bro, I used to watch your show in high school, man. He was like, wow. I remember watching that show when your sounds broke in your car, did you ever get it fixed? I was like, yeah, bro, I got it fixed, bro. He was like, he pointed to my mom and dad. He was like, I met mom and dad, man. I love your mom and dad. He was like, I hate Brad Miller. I'm gonna kill him tonight. But he was like, don't worry, I never do nothing to embarrass you. Like, that's literally what he told me. And for my whole
career, this is the first time y'all had ever met.
For my whole career, Shaq never, you would never see a video of Shaq dunking on me, yelling at me, pushing me, none of that crazy, weird stuff. You know, we just kept it real vanilla when we played each other. But it was a time, bro, where he caught the rebound and like, I don't know, he just, it was a regular move for him, just catching the rebound, kind of clearing out and going up. But on the receiving end of that, it was like a collision. So it was like, you know what I'm saying? And then he looked at me and was like, man, my bad. I thought you was Brad. He's like, I thought you was Brad Miller.
I meant to dunk on him.
Yeah.
Not you,
yeah. So it was, but it was like, it was one of them moments where it's like, bro, I put everything I had into holding them up. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you play Shaq, and you play guys like Yao Ming, bro, you start realizing that if this guy don't want to stop posting that posting and stop crab dribbling you down, he'll do it until you get under the basket. And there's nothing you're gonna do about it. There's nothing you're gonna do about it, bro. So it was one of those matchups with Shaq, and then like I said later on playing Yao Ming, that's when you start like, okay, this is the NBA. And then of course it was, you know, we played Vince Carter, like when Vince was Vince Sanity, you know what I'm saying? Like AI was him still, you know what I mean? So I caught the league at a crazy, crazy place, bro. When I got in the league,
it was
a crazy place, bro. Like we still had some goons. C Webb was still him. Vladdy was in the league. He was him. Tim Duncan was
KG, a young Tim Duncan.
I had the Admiral. I had, you know, bro, we caught the league at a
Barkley.
Really good time, bro. We caught Barkley. We caught the league at a good time. I mean, my man, Pat Ewing was in Orlando at the time, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't the old Pat, but I mean, when you talk about Steve Francis, just I saw what it took to stop these guys, bro, like the preparation and practice and sending extra people and adjusting the defense, and it's still just to let these dudes get 30 points, bro. It don't even, like you different. Know what I'm saying? Like, you realize, like, oh, yeah, the league is different. Like, this is different. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You realize that right away. This is different, bro.
When did you feel like you belonged?
I would say, like, maybe the year before I left Chicago, that's when I started feeling like, oh, yeah, they really can't see me. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I had a coach or an offense that really let me get off like that and get the ball like that, it'd be over with. You know, when we played for Scott Skiles, man, he would give me the first couple plays of the game. I get the first couple plays of each quarter, first couple plays of the half, he coming to me. But it wasn't no, like, steady, let me feed you. You know what I'm saying? But it taught me to really cherish when I get the ball. By the time I got to New York, though, you know, Isaiah was like, just go, bro. Just do your thing. That's why we got you here. And Steph and Maul and all them dudes just did a good job. You know, we had a nice little run where it was just like, every time I show my hand, the ball is going to be there. Mm.
So in between leaving Chicago, getting to New York, you have the heart issues.
Right.
What do you remember about that? Like all these years later with hindsight, 2020, you know, what do you...
I remember everything about it. I remember, you know... The biggest takeaway for me is that I wish I wouldn't have said nothing about it. You know what I'm saying?
Really?
Because I just know my career would have just, it would have been different. And that's no disrespect to the Knicks, but I just know me as a person, where I was at the time mentally and maturity-wise, I wasn't ready to just go to an organization like the Knicks. The Knicks were a way more mature organization. The Bulls were more equipped. They had more things in place to really kind of bring me along slowly and to make sure I still had some checks and balances there. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't realize how much I needed that until I went to New York and looking back, just like, man, what is the difference between New York? Oh, that's what it was, you know? So, you know, that's, you know, New York was a whole nother animal. And I think New York was more built for just that veteran, that guy who's been in the league, who has some self-control, who knows even if I don't have self-control, I know to put somebody in place that'll help me have that self-control or to help nudge me to tell me when I'm going too far. I kind of had to learn all of that firsthand when I went to New York and try to play good basketball in that city. Mm.
It's interesting to hear you say that, because even like at that time, it was closer to, you know, Reggie Lewis, closer to Hank Gathers.
Yeah.
And you still say you wish you never told it. Like, what do you think would have went different?
I mean, of course, this is me. This is hindsight thinking,
of
right?
Because
I mean, when I'm in, I mean, it came a point though, honestly, like early on in that process where I realized that the episode that I had was really benign and it was just a normal thing, a normal irregular heartbeat that a lot of people feel from time to time. I didn't realize how normal it was, but because we were coming out of that Hank Gathers, that Lynn Bias, that whole, like, you know, athletes dying suddenly on the court thing, like it made the Bulls and it made everybody involved kind of like, okay, let's really make sure we get this thing right.
Right, you got to understand their side of it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something that I had to let go, you know, later on in life, I learned to let that go. But yeah, for a long time, I definitely kind of held that and was like, man, you know, I blame Paxson. I blame, you know, a lot of the people that was involved because I felt like, you know, it was kind of used almost as a, a bargaining chip when it came time to compensate me for all the work that I had done and all the things. Like, it was a lot that went into playing that season, period. Looking for a deal earlier on in that summer, and John Paxson telling me, all right, we'll get your body weight to a certain percent and then we'll give you a deal. And I did it and I still didn't get the deal. And he's like, all right, well, let's just have a good season. And then we get to the playoffs for the first time since I've been there. Like, you know, I've been on teams where we won games in the teens, bro. Like, you realize right. how much losing you got to do to only win games, like 18 games in the NBA season. Like,
right.
that's ridiculous. You got to lose a lot of games. That's a lot of losing, bro. And this is from a guy who came from high school, and I did not lose. I probably lost one game, two games my high school career. You know, my senior year, probably maybe like two before that. Never lost more than 10 games in high school. That's AAU. That's every. So to lose, you know what I'm saying, 30-something games, dog, like that's.
Every single year.
Every yeah. single year, bro. Every single year. So now you finally feel like, man, we got a team. We got Ben Gordon. We got Jamal Crawford. We got Kirk Heinrich. Well, we didn't have Maul that went to New York at that time. But we had Kirk Heinrich, Luol Deng, you know what I'm saying, Tyson. Like, we were ready. You
Is
know
that still Skiles? Coaching.
We had Skiles, yeah. So and we end up meeting the Wizards in the first round. We feel like all they had was Gilbert, and we feel like we were a better team with me there. So, you know, to not be able to play in that game, bro, that really, like, I don't know, that was tough, man. That was tough to deal with. That made it even harder to kind of let it go. But yeah, like I said, man, thinking back, knowing what I know now. Knowing that it was like a regular occurrence, it makes me wish I would have just shut my mouth and just, you know, even if I wasn't comfortable playing that night, maybe just say, hey, man, my stomach hurts or right. whatever the case, my back hurts, anything but the
right.
heart.
Just not, know? Yeah.
Anything but the heart, you know. But I call myself, you know, I'm in one of those cities. It was Charlotte, and this is pre-LaMelo Ball Charlotte. This was, you know, this was not one of those games that it was easy to get up for. You know right. what I'm saying? This was one of those games that your family back home is sleeping. Nobody's even up watching this game.
Nobody
checking for this game, bro. You know what I'm saying? That was back when we had my man Rick Camel, I think his name, with the NBA. He was on the NBA network.
Like
the NBA
countdown, or
he would do like his little nightly top whatever performers and stuff like that. Like that was like that used to be like the ultimate. Let's try and make that. But like I. Charlotte games, that like it don't matter what you did in that Charlotte game, you wasn't gonna be on SportsCenter, you wasn't gonna be on nothing. So it was one of those things where it's like, nah, because even when I had told Tyson before I even told our trainer, like, man, I'm feeling this little irregular heartbeat. And Tyson, like, man, you just don't want to play tonight, man. Stop being weak.
right, right.
I'm like, bro, I don't want to play. You are right about that.
Right, but also.
But I am feeling something weird, bro. Like for real. He was like, man, just go tell the trainer. So yeah, that's like the one thing I wish I could get back. It's like, maybe don't rush into that. Maybe see how it feels. See if I feel lightheaded. See if I feel any. I mean, I guess this is before Google. Maybe I could have Googled it if we have cell phones like
yeah, that. Ask Jeeves or somebody. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. I couldn't pull my phone out and go on the internet like I could today. Check the Google doctor, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, WebMD, see what your symptoms are.
Yeah, WebMD would have told me, man, you just need some magnesium and some water. You'll be straight.
Good night's rest, you'll be all right. Because they were trying to get you to take testing, right? The Bulls were.
Yeah.
But you refused.
Yeah, they wanted me to take a DNA test.
Why did you refuse it?
Because I was like, you know what, man, if I take a DNA test, the test was to try to see if I would be predisposed to having heart disease. And it's like, if heart disease is hereditary, like then I'm black, it's a high likelihood. Maybe, you know what I'm saying? It could right. be in my, it could, even a positive test doesn't mean that I have it right now. It just would kind of mean that I'm predisposed to having it. It's a high likelihood that I would have it. Right. But the damage that a positive test would do to my career would have been irreparable. You know what I'm saying? It would have been hard to recover from that, especially going into a year where I was looking to try to get a deal on the open market. So
right.
that was just one of those things. And then that was just me personally. But then looking big picture, it's like, you know, if I allow them to do this, you know, I'm kind of opening up the floodgates for people to start testing for whatever they want to test for, whatever.
Right. When would it stop?
That they deem to be, you know, an imperfection in players, you know, before somebody would even show signs of having this. So let me not walk down this path and see if there's any other option. So at the time, the only other option was to sit out the rest of the year and then sit out all next year, because I had one more year left on my deal, and then see what would happen. And eventually the Bulls said, you know, if I went and found a deal, that they would, if it made sense to them, they would honor the deal and we would do a sign and trade. So, I mean, that's what we ended up doing. Hmm.
So let me ask you, you get to New York, what was it like playing for Larry Brown? Because we've heard Larry Brown and youngish players. What was that like for you?
Man, Larry was cool, dog. Honestly.
Yeah.
What? Larry was super cool. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm trying to think. Like, it got crazy. Like, when we started losing, it got crazy. I ain't gonna lie.
What does that mean? It got crazy. What does crazy, crazy for Larry Brown look like?
It got crazy. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't wanna, like, you know what I'm saying, put nothing crazy out there, but it just got crazy. Like, people don't, like, I was talking to Q Rich, right? That's my brother still to this day. I'm talking to him yesterday, matter of fact. And we just was talking. I was like, Q, bro, like, people could say what they want to say about our New York team, bro, but they have no idea what we had to go through being there. Like, because he was just kind of going, we were just talking, and I got so caught up in life. Like, I had so much going on around the time when I left New York that I didn't even really realize, like, that Q had a whole transition out of New York. Everybody had their transition out of New York. And I just, and I only really thought about mine. So to hear him yesterday talking to me about his transition out of New York, and it's like, damn, how did I miss that? So it's like, I'm like, bro, we just went through so much. Like, we went through so much in New York, man. And that was, it was crazy. Like, it was beautiful to play there. I got memories and I got friendships that I'll have forever, bro. But yeah, bro, basketball wise, man, that was one of the most crazy. Like, I'm gonna write a book one day.
Give me some, like, one is a crazy practice.
Somebody gonna pay me not to write this book. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? Cause it's like that, man. It's like that. Like, bro, it's crazy. But I mean, personally, Larry Brown was cool, man, at first. Like, when everything good and we had training camp and on paper we looked like a great team, everything was good, but when it wasn't good, oh my God, it was. Woo.
You got to have like a give me one practice story or one plane ride or something. We won't keep you too much longer, but you got to have something come to mind from that time.
I'm going to have to come back and talk about that. We're going to have a whole, we need to have a whole segment, because like part I got two. A whole segment. I got a whole Larry Brown segment. I got a whole Isaiah Thomas when he was running this segment. And shout out to Zeke, man, because I love Zeke. But I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy.
And all this was going at the same time, same years, right?
Same years, bro. Like, they just went into year after year. Just it was a lot, bro. It was a lot, man. Like, I'm surprised more people don't talk about it, to be honest with you. Like, I'm surprised, like, when you think about the people that were there, that like, I mean, from Malik Rose to Jamal, my boy Jamal Crawford, Steph. Like, I think it was so crazy that everybody involved was just like, you know what, let's just not talk about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. I was almost like,
if you were there, you would
leave that alone, bro. Let's just leave that alone.
Yeah, we have to come back. What other chronicles you got? You got the Isaiah, the Larry Brown. What else you got?
Man, I got a lot of chronicles. We got the Isaiah, the Larry Brown. We got the Miami Chronicles was incredible. That whole run with LeBron and just witnessing that firsthand was crazy. I felt
you
like
went
I
from
was
New York to Miami, right?
Yeah, I went to Miami when LeBron got his first ring, bro. So just seeing that whole, I thought I saw what it looked like to be on a team with a superstar and be on a team with guys. Bro. When you on a team with LeBron, it's different, bro. It's so different, bro.
What's different?
Man, I mean, you name it. Like, you know, people waiting at hotels, just the extra steps that he had to do anything is crazy. The fact that that you can't go to a mall, you can't go to a movie theater, you can't go to a restaurant, you can't walk down the street, can't go to GameStop, anything that we could do, he couldn't do, bro.
Right.
He couldn't do, you know what I'm saying? So everything was kind of like, you kind of got to just, when you LeBron and people like that, bro, you kind of got to like build the moments. Like, you know what I'm saying? You got to kind of build whatever moment you want to have, you know, and put it in a safe place and then insert yourself in that to experience some of the things that we kind of take for granted as people who you know, got to the highest level, made a bunch of money. We famous, but not kind of like, I'm not going to stop eating my food to come say hi to you famous. You know what I'm saying? Like, LeBron is like, hold on. I've been waiting in this line for 15 right. hours. I got to the front, but I just saw LeBron walk past. I'm going to step out of line just to go take a picture.
Right. I got
to
call somebody. I got to call everybody.
Yeah, like, that's James. A whole nother kind of like, bro, when you see that firsthand, bro, and you see how he deals with it, and you see his family and just how on point his family and his friends, and it makes you like, damn, I wish I would have seen that early on. I would have changed kind of how I was doing stuff. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
just to see that, bro, to see just the Heat culture, the Heat way, and how you could really, how a culture really just plays a real effect on just the outcome of a team, on if they're going to be competitive every night, on if, you know, guys are going to be behaving, you know, off the court, if you're going to have issues with them. Like, it's just certain mm-hmm. things that you just will never see when you're playing for the Heat, bro. You'll never hear certain things from players, and, you know, just you just won't hear it. It just won't happen.
But why is that? Because you, like you said, some organizations seems like guys won't tell what happens, some will. Why are the Heat one of those organizations?
Well, nothing happens there, first of all. Like, it's nothing to tell, to be honest with you. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Nip all that in the bud.
Yeah, when you there, bro, your main focus is getting my Miami Beach body in tune, and then going out here and trying to please Pat Riley, because he ain't playing that. You know what I'm saying? And Spo ain't playing that. And Mickey Arison ain't playing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not playing that over there, bro. And they got their hand in everything out there. You're not going to, like wherever you go, they know you were there. They, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, how'd you enjoy, blah, blah, blah. Like, they know. They run. They have their hand on the pulse of South Beach, of Fort Lauderdale. Like, you ain't doing nothing in Florida, bro, without them knowing what you
they
up to.
They don't already know about it.
That's a whole different kind of, you know, in New York, you know, the nightlife is the nightlife. So you could disappear, you know, you could find something to get into in New York that's going to be off the Knicks radar. But, like, it's not like that in Miami, bro. And even if it is, like, the culture is just that you just don't want to let the next man down, bro. So that's really like I have a unique opportunity at times now to talk to owners and things like that from the Bulls and the Knicks and just different teams and stuff like that. And just giving them that kind of insight, man, is so valuable. And trying to, like, kind of change some of these weird, awkward things that are happening, these disruptions and distractions that are happening amongst our players, bro, is to really let them know that it is a culture thing. You know, it's a culture thing, and that starts with the organization. I think it's tough now because the faces of the franchise, you coming in and they're young. It's just a lot of young dudes. I came up at a time where you really didn't play right away. Like, I didn't start for like 2 years when I went to Chicago. You know, Tyson didn't start for a year or so until we went, you know, while we went in Chicago. So it was really about bringing you along slowly and really just like fine tuning every little thing and really nitpicking and making sure that before we take these training wheels off, you are a pro. You know what I'm saying? So now it's kind of not like that. Now you're getting guys who are coming in and they already got an audience and they already got a fan base and they already, you know what I'm saying? It's right. It's tempting to just throw them out there and give them the team, just give them the keys. And I think we see a lot of, you know, a lot of examples of, you know, what can happen when you give someone a team and the keys a little bit too early. So now I think a lot of teams are trying to balance it out and bring some vets in and things like that to try to just kind of plug and supplement for what they aren't getting. But I mean, it's tough, man. It's a constant struggle. And I don't envy being like a owner today, because I can only imagine like what it's like to try to appease these guys who want to take a short deal, and they deserve a short deal to be able to keep giving themselves options. But at the same time, you got to kind of turn a blind eye sometime, because you got to let them be them at the same right. time, so that you can make them want to still be there. So, I mean, I get it, and it's tough, but I mean, I think that's what makes it so important what I do now. And what, I mean, it's a lot of programs. Like, it's not just a financial program that the PA has. It's the financial program they have, you know, a lot of just life type of programs, relationship programs, and, you know, any type of needs that a player would have, any type of deficiencies that players have. I mean, they have a tool there in place with the PA and with the NBA to really make sure that guys kind of get what they need, man. So, I mean, I think the help is there. We're trying to let guys know that the help is there, and hopefully some guys will get the help that they need so that this game can keep growing, and then so that these contracts can keep growing, and guys can really, you know, just live beyond their wildest dreams, you know. Mm.
You mentioned, you know, you got your hand in a lot of things. What's next for Eddie Curry?
Man, good question. I don't know. You know, I'm like I said, I'm just right now, my focus is really trying to help with the financial literacy program here, and just trying to just be an advocate for that, advocate for peace, an advocate for, you know, mental health, or and asking for help, get the help that you need, man. So not only for yourself, but for our children, you know, letting our children know that it's okay to ask for help. So, I mean, it's a constant thing. Like I said, I got six kids, all over, all ages, all over from 22 to 13. So, you know, trying to raise young adults, trying to, you know, put out fires all over the house between my wife and my daughters, and just trying to be a present, you know, dad. You know, you miss a lot when you play in the NBA. It's the most beautiful thing to be able to play at the NBA at the highest level, but you miss a whole lot, miss a lot of birthdays and first this and like first steps and first all that. So, you know, being present and making up for lost time and really just trying to be prepared for whatever is next. You know, I'm excited about the future though. Mm.
And last question, and we'll let you out of here. What's something that Eddie now would tell 18-year-old Eddie?
Slow down. Slow down, run your race. You get caught up in the like, man, you know, this guy signed a contract, I want to sign a contract. This guy bought this car, I want to buy this car. This guy got married, I'm gonna get married. I want a son. Like when I got to the league, I had to have my son. I had to have dogs. And then you look back, and now I got six kids, which I love and adore, you know, and I probably had 100 dogs in my life. You know what I'm saying? Just because. I had dogs like before had I was, yeah, unlike a kid, you can't just give a kid to somebody else. There's so many people who have dogs in mind. Like, that's probably a whole nother story, like a next whole chapter. Other documentary, Eddie's Dogs or something like that. Because I know I got dogs all over Chicago just because, you know, growing up, I grew up in an apartment, always wanted a dog. So the minute I got some money, boom, I'm buying Pomeranians. All right, the Pomeranians bark and they poop too much. Let me give them to my aunties. Then I got a bulldog, but the bulldog shed too much. And I got another, like it just Rottweilers, German Shepherds, like
all of them.
You know what I'm saying? All of that. And you constantly just slow down, bro. Slow down, run your race. And then when the time is right, if you still want a dog, do some research, figure out, do you want the dog trained already? Which dogs are good house dogs? What type of person are you? Do you even like going out walking dogs? Or, you know what I'm saying? All that plays right,
instead of just getting the dog and figuring it out later.
Just slow down, bro. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I would tell myself, man. Just slow down, bro. Put the dog back.
The dog back. Wise dog word.
Back. Bro, I wanted a monkey. I had an alligator at one point. I'm like, slow down, dude. What you doing, bro?
Wait, what happened to the alligator? And that's the last question. Now,
man, what happened to the alligator? You know what's crazy? When I went to at one point I gave the alligator to my dad because it started getting too big. Sure. My dad was living in Chicago, and he said he put it in the Chicago River, bro. So if anybody ever see an alligator, bro, I'm sorry, bro, but that was my dad. That's the other Eddie Curry, because he Eddie Curry also. That's the other Eddie Curry. It ain't this one. But yeah, my friend, I don't even know how, like, he went up to one of my friends went up to Milwaukee or somewhere, bro, and found an alligator, bought an alligator. He's like, bro, you want an alligator? It's only $300. I was like, hell yeah, I want an alligator.
That's a pretty fair price for an alligator.
For an alligator, dog. You know what I'm saying? And it was so small. It was a small little alligator, bro, but it got big, though.
They'll do that. You couldn't afford not to.
Yeah. At one point, it was like, nah, that little cage is gonna just stay dirty, man. I'm not messing with that alligator, bro. We pulling straws on, man. No, man, you got the alligator. No, you got the alligator. So my dad took the alligator. I guess he just was like, man, you know what? I'm not dealing with this alligator. He put it in the river, man.
I'm setting it free.
Setting it free. Let it go. Let it go, baby.
There we go. Eddie Curry, thank you so much for stopping by the lounge, man.
Man, anytime, Tyler. Thank you.
Oh, appreciate you. You got an open seat anytime, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yep, have a good one.
You too, man.
All right.
And thank everybody for stopping by the Legends Lounge, brought to you by the National Basketball Retired Players Association. Give us a follow on Twitter at NBA Legends Lounge, and be sure to subscribe and rate the Legends Lounge on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you.